Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's our spring membership drive. More about that in just a bit. For now, this hour, it's all politics. We'll do our best to catch up on the political goings-on in Washington with one of the best in the business, veteran political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, Ken Rudin. Welcome back, Ken.
Good morning, Ann.
Lots to talk about, but first, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and this is our spring membership drive. Remember, listener support is the foundation of our budget. Please make your gift right now at WOSU.org or by calling 1-866-897-9678. This show today is about national politics, and there is certainly a lot to talk about. This hour, we have to thank you gift that is perfect for the news junkies listening right now. Make a gift of $19 a month as a sustainer, and you'll get a one-year digital subscription to the New York Times. Enjoy unlimited, anytime, anywhere access to all New York Times content, including breaking news, reviews, opinion blogs, and videos. And your subscription can be accessed on any smartphone, tablet, or web browser. This is a perfect complement to everything you hear on 89.7 NPR News. Make a gift of $19 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $228, visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. That's 1-866-897-9678. And Ken Rudin, once again, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Well, it's my pleasure. Unfortunately, I wish we had things to talk about. I mean, there's not much going on in the world of politics. Can you believe this is only day 70 or weeks, 70 days into the Trump administration? My goodness, every day there's new headlines and you just can't keep but shaking your head.
You know, here's the thing is when I'm preparing for this, as I do like my reporter's roundtable every Monday, I want to go back to things that happened in early March like I ordinarily would have done. And it's like Snoozeville. I mean, it's a million years ago. That's absolutely amazing. I'm having a hard time keeping up these days. I'm reading everything constantly, especially when it comes to the Russia hearings. And yesterday, Michael Flynn agreed to testify if he could get a guarantee of immunity from prosecution. His lawyer says that's just pro forma. But Flynn himself said that when Clinton associates asked for the same thing during the Benghazi hearings, they must have been hiding something. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, we heard Corbett Coleman on the newscast quoting what Michael Flynn said last year about Hillary Clinton. But Donald Trump also tweeted this morning saying he should testify without immunity because it's all fake. Everything is fake. And you know, when you have the president of the United States constantly talking about the institutions of government, like the media, like congressional hearings, all being fake, the people who are out there who are listening really sometimes don't know what to feel, don't know how to react. And again, I think it just lessens the faith and confidence we have in our elected officials.
Is that what you're hearing when you're out and about?
Well, you don't want to know what I'm hearing when I'm out and about, because I was just thinking, when I was a kid, I used to subscribe to a weekly magazine like Newsweek or Time or U.S. News. The thought of waiting a week, or let alone a day. I remember once something big was happening, and I remember thinking like 6 hours later, I can't wait to hear what Walter Cronkite has to say about this tonight at 6:30.
Right.
Who can wait until 6:30 anymore? It's just so remarkable what's happening so fast, and everybody has an opinion immediately.
Yeah, I mean, I feel guilty. I didn't check the Twitter this morning. I can't believe I didn't.
Oh, my God, what's wrong with you?
Me bad. I know, me bad. My guest is Ken Rudin, veteran political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you right now. If you have a question or comment for Ken Rudin, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'll do my best to cover the waterfront with Ken, but if I'm not asking about something you care about, give us a call. President Trump yesterday declared war on the House Freedom Caucus. That's that group of hardline conservative Republicans who blocked the health care bill law last week. And Trump said that he would fight them in 2018. Any wisdom in that or even declaring it at this point?
Well, you know something? I mean, first of all, when the ACHA, the American, I'm sorry, the AHCA, the American Health Care Act was withdrawn from House consideration because the Republicans didn't have the vote. The first thing President Trump did was to blame the Democrats. Now, what the Democrats have to do with this is beyond me. They stayed out of this completely, just as the Republicans stayed out of the American.
They were probably glad to get the press.
Well, exactly right. But then he blamed. First of all, it's not only the Freedom Caucus, hardline conservatives, as you call them, who stopped this from happening. There are a lot of moderate Republicans, a lot of establishment Republicans, who said, "Look, there could be millions of more people thrown out, thrown off the ability to have insurance. The premiums are going to go way up. This is not the right answer." And it's remarkable. And this is the thing that just is the most remarkable, is that for 7 years, Republicans have been talking about, you know, once we get the opportunity to repeal Obamacare. I mean, the House voted 60 times to repeal Obamacare, but you're not going to get rid of Obamacare when you have a guy named Obama in the White House. But now that the Republicans have the White House, have both houses of Congress, and then didn't have a plan written already in advance that everybody could agree to, and that the fact that they had to pull the bill, and yes, Anne, this is all one sentence. I mean, it's just remarkable, and we're back to square zero. But the fact is, he's blaming fellow Republicans. He says, "I am going to take them on. I'm going to make sure they get challenges, primary challenges in 2018. Could you imagine Ronald Reagan, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, anybody threatening your own party with, I mean, the last time we heard that I can think of was maybe FDR in 1938 when he was going after conservative Democrats. But the idea is to build your own party, grow your own party, and not threaten members of your own party with primary challenges.
You know, even Paul Ryan, Speaker Paul Ryan, said last week during that painful press conference that the transition to governing, they weren't ready for it.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. It's easy to say no. It's tougher to say yes. And we always hear that campaigning is one thing, governing is another. But I think not only did it take down President Trump a notch or two, I think it took down Speaker Ryan as well, because Speaker Ryan has been selling himself, or the word on Speaker Ryan is that he's a great tactician. But one, you need to know how to count. And two, you have to know, as John Boehner didn't learn, you have to know that there are competing factions in the Republican Party that may never be on the same page. I mean, the Republicans were never on the same page on so many issues since the Republicans took control of Congress after 2010. So Ryan, I mean, Ryan, you know, is culpable in this disaster as well as anybody else.
Yeah, you didn't have to be prescient to know that this was going to have a problem. He didn't want to go for a vote in the first place, though, right?
Well, I don't
remember
know.
That?
I
mean, then Donald Trump said, "Nope, go for the vote."
And then they decided to have it on the seventh anniversary of the passage of the ACA. Why? It took Obama and the Democrats a year and a half to get it done. With all the language and all the working out the factions. And look, a lot of Democrats took the hit in 2010 as well. Nancy Pelosi pushed as many Democrats as possible to back the bill, but you know, the voters took it out on them in 2010. And I don't know if look, who knows what will happen in 2018? We always said, well, you know, when the Republicans shut down the government in 2013, they'll pay a price in 2014. And of course, they didn't, when Donald Trump was heard on tape saying what he would do about groping women. And everybody said, "Oh, my goodness, you know, his candidacy is doomed." And this was 2 months before the election. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen a year and a half from now in 2018 is really, I mean, we should not be in the prediction business.
Exactly. Thanks to Terry Collins and Hilliard for your pledge of support. Terry writes, "The best radio for honesty, information, and entertainment." Thanks a lot, Terry, for your support. If you want to join Terry, give us a call at 1-866-897-9678, or you can go online to WOSU.org. Remember, it's listener-supported, 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher, and today we're asking you to support the conversations we bring you every day. We were really happy to finally figure out, hey, let's let's bring Ken Rudin on for, I think it was in February, you came on for our match day. And this is a great opportunity to listen to Ken Rudin, hear his insights as we continue to wade into this remarkable political cycle that we're in. We work hard to bring you interesting people, and our conversations are in-depth. Many times we talk to a guest for an entire hour. You only find that on public radio. Support 89.7 NPR News at WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Political junkie Ken Rudin is on the air with me right now, and we welcome your questions. I'll give you that number in a little bit. But for now, think about $9 a month as a sustainer. You can get an all-access pass to the New York Times crossword puzzles. Play the daily, mini, and weekend crossword puzzles, plus access 20 years worth of archives. Start a puzzle on your computer and finish it later on your tablet or phone. That's an all-access annual pass to the New York Times crossword puzzles for $9 a month or a one-time gift of $108 at WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. And Ken, speaking of puzzles, let's return to politics in Washington, D.C. More and more you hear about Republicans having to work with Democrats. I say more and more. This is in the last, 72 hours. House Speaker Paul Ryan said on Sunday that he didn't want that to happen. And I was thinking, really? I mean, I'm not surprised Republicans don't want to work with Democrats, but why would he utter those words?
Well, this is very complicated. Part of the reason is that Donald Trump really does not come from a Republican Party background. He is an independent, outside-the-box thinker. He used to be pro-choice. He used to give money to Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi and Democrats and Chuck Schumer. So that's the way Trump has always dealt. He said, look, I'm a businessman. I'll work with the team that brings me the best results. And that's always been Trump. He did seem to go hard right when it comes to the cabinet and administration officials after his election. But that's always been Donald Trump. When Trump said, when Trump was kind of blowing off steam with the House Freedom Caucus, he said, okay, forget it, you guys. I'll start talking to Democrats. Now, one, I don't see any Democrats willing to talk to Donald Trump because he's blamed them for everything so far. But two, it's basically was, I thought, a threat to the House Freedom Caucus, saying that, you don't want to work with me, well, I'll work with your enemies. And Paul Ryan figures that the worst message you could send to my Republican colleagues is that, well, if we can't get health care done, I'll just work with Democrats. So while I think that no Democrat is going to fall for that line, I think that Ryan desperately doesn't want Trump to move to Democrats before Republicans can get their act together. And I think Paul Ryan is confident that the Republicans can do that.
Speaking of Donald Trump's move to the far right, he's one of his chief advisors is Steve Bannon, a former editor-in-chief of Breitbart News. But more importantly, you must have by now checked out Jane Mayer's article in The New Yorker regarding the Mercer family's influence on the Trump campaign.
Well, yes. I mean, it's interesting that Donald Trump talked about how he would self-finance his campaign. But there are a lot of people, the Koch brothers were not fans of Donald Trump throughout the campaign. They almost were part of the Never Trump contingent of the Republican Party. But the Mercer family, you saw the millions of dollars they put in, into this campaign to make it happen. And it's hard to describe what it is. It's not simple conservative. Is it nationalist? Is it white nationalist? I mean, there's a lot of words thrown out. Well, what Steve Bannon and the new people behind Donald Trump all represent. But the point is, it's a coalition that not only, of course, gets many liberals and progressives nervous. And believe me, if you think of the conversations I've had with progressives and liberals since January 20th, I mean, they're ready to move anywhere. I don't know. They'll move to New Jersey. Oh, no, New Jersey is still part of the country, right? Something like Canada or something. But there are a lot of conservatives, regular Republican conservatives, even members of the Wall Street Journal editorial board, who say that this is not the way that the Republican Party needs to move. But, Trump does it his own way. And, you think of, you know, you say, my goodness, and these the Americans won't stand for this and settle for it. But we did see people, voters, many voters who voted for Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012 in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, said, well, look, the last 8 years were not working. Let's try something new.
Going back to the health care issue, the legislation that failed last week, there is an ilk of political observers who say, you know what, bottom line is the voters will forgive Trump this failure. They don't really care about health care that much, especially as they learned more and more about how much it actually, you know, how many people would be affected if they had adopted the Republican plan. But so what about that? What kind of how does this failure rank? Is it happening early enough? It doesn't really matter. What are voters saying?
Well, I think people absolutely do care about health care. I mean, first of all, they cared about it before 2009 because so many people were without coverage. But now they, you know, with all the advantages and the pluses of the Affordable Care Act, there are a lot of people who say, look, my deductibles are going through the roof. My premiums are going through the roof. So there are a lot of people unhappy. So I think the fact that they didn't, you know, look, many Republicans since 2010 were elected and reelected on the promise to get rid of Obamacare, so-called Obamacare. The fact that they didn't do it is a big political defeat. But again, as you point out, this is still March of 2017. A lot could change. They could come up with a new bill in a month from now or 2 months ago, 2 months from now. People have short memories, but I think it does matter. You know, what's going on with these healthcare bills. And as long as anything will give people more coverage with less cost and less, like the prescription drugs are still going through the roof, if anybody could come up with a plan to make things more inexpensive and yet still the coverage still strong, people will go for it. I think it's still a very important issue.
Well, it's still, but that being said, it's a huge if. I mean, if anyone could come up with lower costs and better benefits, wouldn't they have done it by now?
Well, that's the argument, too. I mean, it's, you know, Republicans kept saying, well, once we get in office, it's repeal and replace. The repeal part is easy, although it's that even that's not easy. And there are some Republicans like Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, who say, let's just repeal it. Let's just repeal it, get rid of it, go back to pre-29 and then work from there. But no, it's obviously not easy because you're absolutely right. Republicans would have had alternatives throughout those intervening years since they took over in 2017. And they certainly didn't have something that worked with every Republican in 2017.
I think some of the listeners are being a little shy out there, Ken Rudin. I want to encourage people to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you have a question for Ken Rudin, he's ready, willing, and able to answer your questions. Once again, 614-292-8513. And we have an email from Brad in Columbus. He says, I'm too young to remember the Nixon administration, but I wonder if Ken could comment on any similarities, differences between Trump's and Nixon's starting months. Did Nixon get at any time at all to try to and govern, or was the media on him like they are Trump? I have always loved following politics, but I am even feeling fatigued by the coverage. When, in Ken's opinion, will it end, or are we in for weekly revelations until 2020? And to that, I might add daily or hourly revelations. Ken Rudin?
Yeah, it's not going away. It didn't go away with Bill Clinton scandals. It didn't go away with George W. Bush scandals. And I have scandals in quotes here. And, it gets worse and worse each succeeding presidential administration, just like with the battles over Supreme Court justices. And hopefully we'll talk about Neil Gorsuch in a bit. But every succeeding nomination becomes a World War III political fight.
Since Robert Bork.
I would think it'd go back to Robert Bork in 1987 when that was Ronald Reagan's nominee for the Supreme Court. And of course, the left, you know, pilloried him. But of course, there are many progressives who said it was deserved. Anyway, the point is, yes, it's been going on with Robert Bork, with Jim Wright, with John Tower, with all these, one after another, tit for tat battles. But Richard Nixon, the similarities with Richard Nixon is Richard Nixon always had was paranoid about the press. You know, you think about his famous 1962 when he was conceding the election for governor of California. He said, well, the good news is you won't have Nixon to kick around anymore. And that was the way he felt about the press. And I'm sure that's the way the press felt about him. But I don't remember for all the Nixon paranoia that we've been reading about in so many great books and so many, you know, historical stories. It wasn't until 5 years into his presidency where it got so crazy. We're talking about 70 days into Trump, where Trump basically from day one has been lambasting the press and every opportunity that it's crooked, that it's liars, that it's just
fake
bad
news.
Fake news, all that stuff, the failing New York Times, which of course he reads every day. Mm-hmm. But Nixon, I still think, look. In 1972, you could blame or thank George McGovern for it, but Nixon won 49 states out of 50 states. There was still a feeling that he was doing a good job. The real paranoia came, of course, in the aftermath of the break-in in the Watergate office building and all the tapes that revealed his obsessions about Jews and Democrats and blacks and the media and things like that. So it took us at least in Nixon's term in office, it took at least 5 years for us to say, wow, there's something weird here. A lot of people are saying it within days of January 20th, 2017.
I read an analysis that, he's certainly not the first president to have really crappy public opinion ratings at this point in the game. But those other ones had things like the Depression, a war, and Watergate to grapple with. Not a really great all things being equal, a good economy, complete control at the federal level of government and, you know, otherwise not much of a, you know, nothing like the other stuff.
No, I think this is historic lows in popularity numbers for an incoming president. His numbers are hovering between, you know, the upper 30s and the low 40s. That is unheard of. Richard Nixon had great numbers until 1973, mm-hmm. which is 5 years into his presidency.
Yeah, it was his second term that was had a problem.
Right. And Lyndon Johnson, too, you think of him being forced out by racial animosities and the Vietnam War, but that took several years as well. I mean, he had stratospheric numbers, of course, when he was elected in 1964, and then all the things he accomplished in 1965 with civil rights and voting rights. It took, I mean, credit Donald Trump. He's doing in just weeks what it took presidents years to do.
Thanks to Kezia Sproat in Chillicothe and Stephen Smith in Newark for your pledge of support. If you're interested in joining them in supporting 89.7 NPR News and the kind of programming we bring to you every single day, give us a call. This hour of All Sides is about national politics with the one and only political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken's been a good friend to All Sides for a long time and to WOSU for many years, and we're happy to have him with us this hour. This is our spring membership drive. We have two great thank you gifts this hour. For $19 a month, get access to an annual subscription to the New York Times Online. And your subscription can be accessed on any smartphone, tablet, or web browser. Check it in on news whenever you want without having to worry if you've used up those 10 clicks per month. Your unlimited anytime, anywhere access to the New York Times also gets you breaking news, very important in this climate, reviews, opinion blogs, and videos. Make a contribution of $19 a month as a sustainer. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678 or make a gift of $9 a month as a sustainer and get $12 months of an all-access pass to the New York Times Online crossword puzzles. This includes the daily crossword and more than 20 years of archives. It's $9 a month or a one-time gift of $108 for all device access to the New York Times crossword puzzles. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. We have a room full of volunteers ready, willing, and able to take your calls to show your support for 89.7 NPR News. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear what you think about 89.7 NPR News as well, and All Sides with Ann Fisher for that matter. So let them know what you think about the station, why you're showing your support, and we'll read it on the air. Let's turn to some callers who have questions for Ken. Mitchell in Dublin, you're on the air.
Hi, everybody. How's everybody going?
Good.
Good. Hey, Ken, I had a question or your comment about how Trump now has his daughter actually officially in his inner circle, not just his son-in-law. And, you know, with, you know, she obviously doesn't have much experience in politics or you know, policy making. I mean, she can sell shoes, I'm sure, but is it, do you think it's illegal in any way or just not ethical? And, you know, I'll hang up and listen to your comment.
Thanks, Mitchell.
Well, yeah, Mitchell, thanks for that call. I mean, first of all, it's not certainly not illegal. And yes, she does not. I would give Ivanka Trump much more credit than selling shoes. She is a savvy business person. She's also been by Donald Trump's side for years. It's interesting that he seems to trust his family more than anybody else, certainly members of Congress. So when you have Ivanka Trump and her husband, Jared Kushner, with offices in the White House, people say, well, is it violating the anti-nepotism law? Remember, Congress passed that in 1967 after President Kennedy picked his brother, Robert Kennedy, to be Attorney General. And people said, well, that's going beyond the thing. Ivanka Trump, neither Ivanka Trump nor Jared Kushner are getting salaries. Are there business complications and perhaps conflicts of interest regarding the Trump Foundation? That's my real concern. But I think he trusts her. You know, for all the controversies of the family and the questions about the family, it may not seem kosher to many people, but the fact is that he's the kind of guy who believes in very close and unfettered loyalty, and nobody's more loyal than Ivanka Trump.
Thanks, Mitchell, for that question. Mark in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Mark.
Hi, hi, folks. Hi, Ken, old friend of yours.
Hi, Mark.
Here in town. We got some off-year elections coming up this fall, don't we? In New Jersey, governor, and in Virginia, and mayor of New York. What do you expect of those?
Well, I mean, right now in New Jersey, it's a slam dunk for the Democrats. Chris Christie cannot seek a third term. His numbers are worse than Donald Trump's. They're in the 20s. And, of course, we just saw this week that two of his former top two aides were sent to jail for their role in Bridgegate, which, I mean, I'm not sure they deserve 2-year jail sentences, but Chris Christie has had a tough time. He did not get good press when it looked like he was doing everything he could to either be Trump's running mate or serve in the administration or even carry his dry cleaning. I mean, there was a lot of mockery of Chris Christie. But anyway, the Republicans, they're going to probably run the lieutenant governor there or maybe a state assembly person. The Republicans will lose the governorship of New Jersey. That's not in question. What is very interesting in Virginia, Terry McAuliffe, no governor in Virginia can succeed himself. That's state law. Terry McAuliffe will have to step down. Republicans really, really want the governorship there with Ed Gillespie, the former RNC chair, and the Democrats seem to be beating each other up between the moderates and the establishment choice and the progressive alternative. So the battles we've seen, the Bernie Sanders versus Hillary Clinton battles we've seen nationally with the Democrats may be playing out in Virginia. So the Republicans are hopeful for a pickup there. New York City, I mean, you know, it's hard to see the case that Mayor de Blasio can be defeated. He was cleared by many ethics investigations he was under. And my initial knee-jerk reaction would be simply Republicans never have a chance there. But, of course, we did see Rudy Giuliani for 2 terms. We saw Michael Bloomberg, who's not a real Republican, but he was elected several times as a Republican. I suspect that de Blasio gets reelected there. We also have state legislative races around the country, too, and those are things to watch because the state legislatures and the governors elected in 2018 will be the key to redistricting in 2020. Mm-hmm. So for all those Democrats and the people who say, you know, the redistricting is what keep the Republicans in power this past decade, you'll see the governor's races and the state legislative races being very key in 2017 and 2018.
Mark, thanks a lot for that call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest this hour, Ken Rudin, veteran political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Ken, speaking of the Democrats for just a minute, how do you rate how they're managing amid this kind of dysfunction in Washington, D.C. right now? Are they capitalizing on it? Are they too weak to do anything about it or with it or what?
Well, that's a great question. And, of course, you know, we saw for all the years of the Obama administration, we saw Democrats split. We certainly saw it at the 2016 convention when Bernie Sanders, there were still many Bernie Sanders supporters who still would not acknowledge that Hillary Clinton would be the nominee. We saw it in the battle for the DNC chair. We also saw a lot of complaints, mostly by progressives, that too many Democrats were not willing to fight the Trump administration when it came to cabinet appointees and things like that. But, you know, just the way that it looked like the Republicans were united for all those years in the opposition of Obama, now we're seeing fracture lines in the Republican Party, and now suddenly the Democrats are feeling more emboldened, with a little spring in their step. We did see that when the Republicans, you know, were eating their own during the healthcare battle, Democrats suddenly said, well, wait a second, we may have something to say here. But they're still split over what to do with the Neil Gorsuch Supreme Court nomination. Two Democrats came out this weekend, last couple of days, in favor of him. Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, two states that went overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. They will both support Gorsuch's nomination. Now, of course, here's what's interesting here. There's no question that there's a majority sentiment in the Senate wants Gorsuch on the court. There are 52 Republicans. All 52 will back Gorsuch. But will they get the 60 votes that most Supreme Court nominees seem to need? Mm-hmm. And if they don't, and it doesn't look like they'll get 60, then Mitch McConnell will employ the nuclear option, which means let's get rid of the filibuster altogether when it comes to Supreme Court nominees, and let's just do majority vote. That would normally anger the Senate, which is steeped in tradition, but then you could blame the Democrats because it was Harry Reid in 2013 that got rid of the filibuster for lower court nominations and cabinet nominations, and he kind of used the nuclear option back in 2013, which came back to bite the Democrats because they could no longer filibuster the Trump nominees. Betsy DeVos would never have been confirmed as education secretary had there been a filibuster in place. So the Democrats would like to be united against Gorsuch. There are some cracks in the armor, those two Democrats we see, but I think in the aftermath of the collapse of the healthcare bill, the Democrats seem to be more emboldened, more aggressive, and seemingly more united. But you know, it's easy to be united when you're out of power. It's tougher to govern when you're in power.
As the Republicans are learning. Email exactly. From Carla that's kind of related. For those who are concerned about the 2018 elections, how do you think Democrats can best pitch their side? Should they have an anti-Trump message or some other tactic? That depends on what your district looks like.
Well, that's very true, too. And you know something? A lot of the postmortem of the 2016 elections say that Hillary Clinton, now I don't know if I necessarily agree with this, but a lot of people said that Hillary Clinton didn't have a coherent message. She just spent most of it attacking Donald Trump and being against Donald Trump. And a lot of people seem to be taking that as conventional wisdom. That's why she lost. You can't just run an anti-Trump campaign because, look, as Donald Trump famously said in 2015, I could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and I still wouldn't lose any support. There are still a lot of Trump supporters who will back him no matter what, mm-hmm. even if it turned out he was on, you know, the Kremlin's payroll. I mean, that they will back him because they just like the fact that he tells it like it is. He is not politics as usual. Now, in the battle in 2018, you have a problem in numbers for the Democrats, certainly on the Senate side. There were 25 Democratic seats up in 2018, only 9 Republican seats. So that seems to give advantage for Republican pickups, if anything. So the Democrats may have a lot of problems trying to hold on to those seats. But in the battle for the House, you know, if there's an anti-Trump wave, and again, we're talking about a year and a half from now, even longer, if there's an anti-Trump wave, if his numbers continue to hover in the 30s or 40s, there could be, you know, an anti-Republican wave, as we saw an anti-Republican wave in 2006 and 2008 against Bush, or an anti-Obama wave in 2010. We have a long way to go, but I kind of think that, I mean, look, these are turbulent times. We saw upheavals in 2008 with Obama, and then another upheaval in 2016 with Trump. We'll see what happens, but my goodness, they're already planning for the elections right now. They're recruiting candidates like crazy, and we still have nearly 2 years to go.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We have just about 20 minutes to go left in the hour. I'd like to see 10 calls. I'd like to hear about 10 calls and say thank you to 10 more people that have supported 89.7 NPR News. Locally run and locally programmed 89.7 NPR News exists to make sure that everyone in our wonderful corner, or whatever you want to call Central Ohio, has access to vital news and information with locally focused programs like All Sides with Ann Fisher. 89.7 NPR News addresses issues that impact our community at local, regional, and national levels. It's valuable radio, but it relies on your donations to keep it on the air. Please give now at WOSU.org or by phone at 1-866-897-9678. It's our spring membership drive, and your support pays for the programs like All Sides that you listen to every day. We have some really, really nice thank you gifts that I hope you'll check out. You can make a contribution of $19 a month as a sustainer, and you can get access to the New York Times online. It's called New York Times Online. It's an annual subscription for $19 a month. You can access it on any smartphone, tablet, or web browser. You can check in on the news whenever you want, which is more important than ever, without having to worry if you've used up those 10 clicks per month. Your unlimited anytime, anywhere access to the New York Times also gets you breaking news, reviews, opinion blogs, and videos. That's for $19 a month as a sustainer. Give us a call right now at 1-866-897-9678. Love to see 10 calls before the end of the hour, which is now down to a little over 18 minutes now. You can make a gift of $9 a month as a sustainer and get $12 of an all-access pass to the New York Times online crossword puzzles. Now, I know you don't want to stop listening to make this call or to go online, but really, it only takes a few minutes, just 2 minutes to do this. They're very, very quick. Our volunteers who answer the phones a couple doors over from me have been trained to do it quickly and to answer your questions if you have any. So give us a call right now, 1-866-897-9678, and visit with our volunteers a couple doors away. I check in with them every morning and after the show to see how it goes. And I know they like to be busy, so help them out. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. We have just a little over 17 minutes left in the hour, and I need to hear that this is something that you value. The conversations with Ken Rudin, the weekly reporters roundtable on Monday, all of the political coverage that we give you every week, day in and day out, not just on All Sides, but on All Things Considered, on Morning Edition, and all the other great programming you hear on 89.7 NPR News. Show us that you care. 1-866-897-9678. Now, back to Ken Rudin.
And could I just add something quickly, just quickly? This is not my role to be a pitchman and things, and I know it's great to have a digital subscription to the New York Times, but there is a lot of uncertainty about the future of public broadcasting with this new administration. This is not an anti-Trump pitch here, but the point is there are questions about how much of a commitment there will be to public broadcasting coming out of Washington. The money that goes to from the listeners that go to your local stations, I think, are more important than ever. We've heard of threats to public broadcasting for years now. This seems more acute than ever. And I think that God bless, it's great to have a New York Times digital subscription, but to keep WOSU on the air, this is exactly what this money is for. And it's, I think it's more important than ever. And that's my two cents.
Thank you for your two cents, Ken Rudin. Now I'm asking people for
$19. I'd like to contribute two cents to WOSU.
1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org and show your support right now. An email from Tom says, I would love, that's all caps, to have heard what Will Rogers and Mark Twain would say about politics today. It is a golden age of late night comedy, though. Colbert, Samantha Bee, Trevor Noah, SNL, all are on fire nowadays. So much fun. Yeah, that's true.
Fun? Did I hear the word? Wait, Tom, did I hear the word fun?
It's work.
Yikes.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. It's a very different day and age. I mean, I've been covering just for 30 years, and Wow. It's kind of overwhelming. Adam in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Adam.
Hey, I have a question about health care. I heard you guys talking about it. It's a big subject now. Now that the Democrats have had a plan and there's some animosity on the conservative side, and then the Republicans had a plan, and obviously everybody hated that, is this now the time to start talking about socialized medicines at lower costs, just like the rest of the world?
Ken Rudin?
Well, Adam, I don't know if it's time to talk about socialized medicine. I think not with a Republican Congress and a Republican president. But I will say that, you know, during I was thinking of during the debates between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders in 2016. And when Bernie Sanders said we need to fix what's wrong with the Affordable Care Act, Hillary Clinton would say that Bernie Sanders is out to kill the Obamacare, which is not true. But there are a lot of things wrong with it. There are a lot of things that are making people unhappy regarding premiums and deductibles and things like that. And we have to make sure that, you know, all the things that the good things about the ACA are maintained. There's no way that socialized medicine comes in with a Trump in the White House and a Republicans in Congress. But there are serious changes that need to be made to health care. And I think both parties acknowledge that.
We do have socialized medicine in the United States. It just doesn't apply to everybody.
Well, that's true. I mean, I just remember, not that I remember it, but I remember reading about it, that when Medicare was proposed and passed, you know, the AMA and others called it socialism and creeping socialism. So, look, there is a role for government. There's obviously a role for not to leave the people. Look, the reason I think that Governor Kasich was for so long pushing for Medicaid expansion, not because he's not a conservative, but because he has people who desperately need it. And I think there is a role of government. Yes, ideology is fun, but protecting people and keeping people covered is even more important. And so that's why this socialism exists. But and I think even Republicans acknowledge that.
Question or comment for Ken Rudin, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll get to a few calls, but first I want to just remind listeners, there's 14 minutes left in this hour. Let's get 10 calls to make this hour a success. Help me out. Let me start knocking off these calls one at a time. I want to say thanks to you for giving us a call right now, 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. If you're listening special because Ken Rudin's on right now, show us and tell us that you care. We need to know. 1-866-897-9678. You have some great thank you gifts, the New York Times crossword puzzle, or a full subscription to the New York Times at two different donation levels, support levels, one at $19 a month for the full subscription to the New York Times, the other one at $9 a month or a one-time gift of $108 for the all-device access to the New York Times crossword puzzles. Thanks to Joseph Satterfield in Columbus for your support. Thank you so much for telling us that this is something that matters to you. Again, if Joseph Satterfield could just go tell us real quick, it only took a few minutes, so take the time right now to show us while we're on the air with Ken Rudin. 9 to go and just about 12 minutes to go. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Joel in Westerville, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Joel.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a standing member of WOSU proudly, and honored to talk with Ken.
Thanks.
Wanted to ask about the news today that General Michael Flynn is willing to testify those seeking immunity. And I'm just curious, is there any reason that we could think of that he would ask for immunity unless he's fearing prosecution, unless he's ready to testify about things that he did that broke the law?
Well, that's a great question, and that's exactly throwing back the words that he said about Hillary Clinton and her supporters in 2016. He said the only reason anybody would ask for immunity is that they're probably guilty of something, General Flynn being the great legal mind he is. But the point is that it's clear that by monitoring Russian officials, we learned that some of these officials spoke to Michael Flynn, even though Flynn said that was not the case. And once it found out that it was the case, Trump had no alternative but to get rid of him. There are questions about not only Michael Flynn, there are questions about members of the administration, there are questions who said what to whom. And what's interesting about that is, most interesting, is that the House Intelligence Committee, under the chairmanship of Devin Nunes of California, his job is to really get to the bottom of it. And we saw James Comey testify a few Mondays ago, and the National Security, National Intelligence Director testified. And now you have the prospect of Devin Nunes, the Republican chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, meeting White House officials on White House grounds with getting intelligence information, then giving it to Donald Trump, which I can't imagine Trump didn't have, mm-hmm. and then later telling the Democrats and the Republicans on his own committee what he had. And the question is, how do you run an independent investigation at the same time while you're feeding the President of the United States information? So we're talking about lack of confidence in our news media. There seems to be now a lack of confidence in that Congress can get its act together, certainly regarding the House Intelligence Committee. Democrats like Nancy Pelosi are demanding that Nunes recuse himself from the investigation. He says he won't. But right now, if there's any hope for any kind of investigation that could be taken seriously, it's the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Thank you to Audrey Kramer in Rochester, New York, for your support. Audrey writes, keep up the good work by getting guests like Ken Rudin on the show. And Audrey, we will do our level best. I know there's people who listen across the country. If you're listening right now online, show your support as well. This is, in a way, your local radio station, too. If you listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher to figure out what's going on in Central Ohio and what's going on in Ohio, if you listen to it because you like the national coverage we bring to you and the national level guests we bring to you, like Ken Rudin, give us a call. 8 more calls to go this hour and about 9 minutes left. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. I'd love to hear from more of our listeners from across the country who listen every day, and especially tune in when the likes of Ken Rudin is on the air with me. 1-866-897-9678. Remember, public radio is community radio, and more, it's a community that spans the country. That's why 89.7 NPR News brings you a show like this one. All Sides works hard to bring you shows every day that capture the news, politics, and cultural interests of our unique region and our unique state. This powerful service helps you understand Central Ohio and the state of Ohio just a bit more with stories that impact your life, your work, and your family, but it's powered by you. Please join in with your radio station and your local talk show. Make your 89.7 NPR News donation right now. Thanks to Penny Tips in Westerville for your support. Penny, hey there, Penny. Thanks a lot for listening and thanks for your support. 7 more calls left to go. 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org. Just 7 minutes to go now, and we need your help. We need you to show your support right now. Mike and Bexley, you're on the air. Hi, Mike.
I do have a comment, not a question. That's that I really hope that you folks in the media will press on with these investigations about ties between Trump's people and the Russian government. I don't like what's going on here. I suspect that one or more people may have committed a treasonous offense. And that's it.
Thanks a lot, Mike, for that call. Appreciate it. Ken, at this point, do you see the media pursuing this, or is this something that has to be more done at the congressional level, whether it's the House or maybe it kicks over to the Senate or whatever?
Oh, no, I absolutely see the media. Matter of fact, it's almost interesting to watch. It seems like the media almost fell down on its responsibility in 2015 and 2016. It seemed like they were more fascinated by the specter of Donald Trump, and they just, many of them just didn't do their jobs. But now it seems like there's a more concerted effort. Both you see it on cable TV as well as newspapers, more investigations. Now, the Trump people would say, well, this is part of the crooked media. But I think most people who respect an independent press I think they should have no reason not to be pleased with the new aggressiveness that you're seeing both in print and broadcast media.
Thanks to Elizabeth Foreman and Gambier for your support. Just six more calls to go and just about 6 minutes to go. 1-866-897-9678. I know we've got the people across the hall here who are taking the calls. They can handle it. Give them a call right now. You won't wait. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Email from Chase, curious to know Ken's thoughts on the actions of West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin. He seems to have gone against party lines in a lot of confirmation votes, and most recently for Supreme Court nominee Gorsuch. How much of this is his moderate beliefs, and how much of this is about his upcoming reelection in 2018 to a mostly red state?
I don't think it's about the election stuff. I think Joe Manchin has always been an independent kind of guy. It's very interesting. West Virginia used to be the most loyal Democratic state in the country for the longest time because of historic poverty. And but Joe Manchin is an independent mind. I don't think he has any problems with getting reelected in 2018. He drives Democrats, many progressive Democrats, nuts. But he's very popular. He protects the coal industry in West Virginia, which is a Trump issue as well. Again, you know, he and Heidi Heitkamp, yes, they're in red states that went overwhelmingly for Trump, and they have to worry about re-elections. But I kind of think that this is who Joe Manchin is at his core.
Let's talk a little bit about, we just have a few minutes left, but about those moderate Republicans in the Tuesday group. What is the Tuesday group? They don't get as much attention as the Freedom Caucus. Do they harness much power, Ken Rudin?
No, once upon a time, the words liberal Republican was not something that you would just guffaw at. There were serious liberal Republicans in the Senate. Mm-hmm. There was Bill Saxby. There was Jacob Javits. There was Clifford Case. There was Edward Brooke, Charles Percy. There were a lot of them all over the country. There were fewer and fewer, but they also represent districts that may have gone for Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, but they still want, you know, Republican rule on the congressional level, and they feel in a lot of either on abortion, on health care, on things that are near and dear to their heart. They may not agree with so-called Trump philosophy and conservative philosophy, but you know, if the Republican Party only becomes a Freedom Caucus wing of politics, then I think they're at the risk of losing everything in 2018. Just like you have Joe Manchin's liberal Democrats liberal Democrats around the country. You need a Republican Party that's not just one of one ideology.
And you need a local radio station that opens its ears to all points of view. And that's what 89.7 NPR News does through all of its programming across the week, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, everything from BBC to All Sides with Ann Fisher to All Things Considered to all kinds of things, On Point, you name it, Fresh Air with Terry Gross. We're privileged today to have Ken Rudin, veteran political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast on today. We will have the Weekly Reporters Roundtable on for Monday, right there in the middle of our spring membership drive, because we know it matters to you in these turbulent political times. You listen to 89.7 NPR News because you treasure a vibrant and open-minded community where people are engaged, where people work together to make Central Ohio a great place to live. That's why this station is dedicated to a two-hour daily local show like All Sides. We are here for Columbus, Powell, Grove City, Pickerington, Hilliard, Worthington, Westerville. It goes on and on. Delaware, it goes all the way up and all the way down to the river. Stand behind the service you care about and rely on. We need six more calls, and there's just 2 minutes left in this hour. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org, because there is a difference between a station that just gets by and one that's the centerpiece of a vibrant civic community like ours. That difference is you, and is your donation, and it's your show of support. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Ken Rudin, I have to say goodbye. I hate saying goodbye to you, but I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. I'm going to still keep talking even though I go off the air. I'm going to sit here, continue to talk, and if anybody wants to call me at home, we could talk. No, I'm serious. Thank you for what you do, and thank you, WOSU, for what you do. You are desperately needed in these times.
That's Ken Rudin, veteran political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. This is listener-supported WOSU-FM and HD1 Columbus and online at WOSU.org, a service of WOSU Public Media 89.7 NPR News. Global, local. Give us a call, 1-866-897-9678. We have less than 1 minute, and we're looking still for six more calls. That's 1-866-897-9678. You can go online, that counts too, at WOSU.org. Remember, the difference between a station that just gets by and one that's the centerpiece of a vibrant civic community like ours. And that difference is you. It's not me. It's not my producers, it's you and your donation. 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Thanks to Kitty Temple in Dublin for your support. Everybody else, pitch in and join Kitty right now. 1-866-897-9678. And thanks for your support and thanks for listening.